Welcome, everyone, and thanks for being with me this next hour. You are listening to what we call the Friday Morning Show with C.A. Brooks on 1-2 Radio, changing the way we think about our experience in the world. And one of the reasons I say it's because what we're calling it the Friday Morning Show is that is very likely to change in the next few weeks because, as many of you know that have been listening in this particular time slot, we have had a variety of hosts, and I'm usually here every other week, but now I'm going to be here every week, and this is definitely going to be targeting spirituality and specifically A Course in Miracles. So we're going to do a variety of things, but it's always going to be A Course in Miracles at 8 a.m. Pacific on 1-2 Radio on Fridays. So welcome. Thanks for being here today. And let's just, you know, get going. This is, if you're listening live, this is January 19th, 2018. And on today's show, we will be discussing A Course in Miracles with writer, web designer, and ACIM teacher Bruce Rawls. Now, Bruce and I have been focusing on the ACIM manual for teachers, and specifically the section of the manual that is looking at what are the characteristics of God's teachers. Now, in the fall, we had gone through several of them. We went through trust, we went through honesty, tolerance, and gentleness. And so I think we're kind of up to joy and defenselessness for today. So that's what we're going to look at. So if you have the manual for teachers, you may want to pull it out. You can follow along. One thing I noticed, though, is these sections are fairly small, but they are loaded. I mean, they are really powerful in terms of the concepts. I mean, at first I looked at it and I thought, oh, my God. But, you know, that's been my experience with A Course anyway. In fact, I have been rereading a book of Ken Wapnick's that is on the obstacles to peace, and it's called The Journey Home. And I love that book, and I remember how much I enjoyed reading it, so I pulled it out again. Well, and I'll tell you what, every day, even if I spend an hour or 90 minutes reading it, I only get through 3 or 4 pages. And the reason is because it is so impactful. It is so powerful. You know, the simplest sentence means so much in our lives. And I think when I looked at these, you know, yesterday, I thought, you know what, these are the same way. You know, what looks like this small section, oh, we can just breeze through this. This is just about, you know, defenselessness. Well, that's a huge, huge topic. So anyway, that's what we're going to talk about today. And if you want to join us in the chat room, many of you know that we do have a chat room over on Facebook, and you can get there by going over to 12radio.com. And when you look at that, you can press that chat button, and that will take you directly over to Facebook, where you can then ask questions or make comments, etc., and join people that are already there. And hey, good morning, Greg. Thanks for being an early bird today. Thanks for being there. And everybody who will join us, thanks for coming and listening and being in the chat room. So let's get Bruce on the air. Hey, Bruce, how are you? I hear you laughing in the background.
I'm great. Thanks, CA. It's always always a joy to converse with you and share with your listeners. So.
Oh, good. Yeah. Well, let's start today by anything that you would like to say or announce or, you know, what's been going on for you? Because I know we haven't been on the air since, was it October?
I believe it's been a few months. Yeah. Yeah.
So what's going on for you?
Well, a lot of more of the same. The latest excitement was yesterday, a pipe burst in our kitchen sink and the garage got a bit flooded. So see, we've got some plumbers coming out today, but I was interesting. What was interesting about that though, was watching my thoughts and instead of the usual, you know, blame game, I was realizing, oh, this is my projection. And I caught myself fairly quickly compared to what might have transpired, even a few months or years ago. And I realized, and I was thinking about what we're going to be talking about today. I think it's starting to click a little. And I was thinking, why do I need to be upset? You know, I mean, I certainly on the level of form had every right to be, you know, it's like, okay, I had to turn off the water and the hot water. And fortunately, our neighbors are good friends, and I was able to go up there and shower up there and that sort of thing. And we've got plumbers coming out, plumbers coming out today. So hopefully it will be, you know, restored fairly quickly. But it's at the same time, it was just kind of like, wow, how interesting to just look at the thought process of, you know, being upset and realizing it's not for the reason I think.
Yes.
And realizing that my joy doesn't have to be contingent on whether or not there is water available on tap through the plumbing that I normally use in the house here, you know, and just kind of, again, watching my thoughts about that. And then realizing, you know, about the, you know, defensiveness, you know, do I need to defend a perspective or a point of view, and watching those thoughts as well. And it's been, you know, actually kind of fun to realize that there's nothing I need to defend. And, you know, one of the things was, you know, that what precipitated it on the level of form was my wife, I installed a new faucet in the sink, and it has a sprayer handle that pulls out, and it has a little automatic thing that put your hand underneath it and a little sensor, and it turns it on and off. And
oh,
that was
cool.
And it is cool. And it was working fine. Other than the fact that now there was a whole bunch of extra plumbing and cables and wires and whatnot under the sink. And apparently something got snagged, and when she attempted to pull it out, it put enough pressure on the pipe that it broke. So, it wasn't anything that was, you know, it was, in other words, it was something that if I just looked at the cause effect relationship, it would be easy to assign a blame or a perpetrator, but yet it's really just if I really look at the contents of my mind, it's really, okay, I neglected to mention that there was other things under there. So I could have said something, but even more fundamental than that, it was basically a recognition in my mind that there is, plumbing and wiring in my thoughts, if you will, that are still plumbed to ego connectors, if you will. And so if I can recognize symbolically that this is my mind that I'm looking at the plumbing and the wiring of, then it becomes a fun process. So anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and, you know, several different things come to mind for me as I read these sections. Mm-hmm. And partially what you're saying is one of the things that I noticed, like in the defenseless section, is it said God's teachers have learned how to be simple.
Mm-hmm.
And that really strikes me because that's an idea that I'm far from there. I love the idea of simplicity, but that intrigued me as I read this, because when we don't need a whole lot of defenses, when we don't need to like build all these, you know, reasons and blame, etc., our life really is simple.
It really is.
We love to make it really complicated. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, another thing I was thinking, and see, my mind was automatically going to the complication with the plumbing, you know, and just what about this and what about this and what about the, you know, the metaphysical repercussions of this, or what are the astrological, you know, symbols of this? Well, because truthfully, I think this is interesting. All week long, I've been hearing about people falling on ice and breaking bones. And that to me is so related astrologically to Saturn having moved in Capricorn. Uh-huh. And I actually fell in the driveway trying to scoop snow. And I never fall. I mean, I'm not going to say I never fall, but that's just not what I do. I mean, you know, I wear my good boots and I'm prepared. And I took one step onto the driveway and I was down before I even knew it. But I thought, but there is a reason I keep hearing about all the broken bones. And so now in your case, it's not a broken bone, but it's a broken pipe. And it just reminds me so often that once again, it's like, who is our teacher? What is our foundation? We keep thinking that we can trust these foundations or the transient kind of world that we live in. And every single time we do that, we're going to be disappointed because it's physics, you know, and which kind of goes back to the section on joy too, because once again, I mean, I guess I can't help myself. I think there's a tarot card that has to do with wishes coming true and happiness, but it's very dependent on certain events, or it's very dependent on somebody doing something we want. And yeah, then we're temporarily happy.
Uh-huh.
But there's another tarot card that to me represents, it's not about being happy because something happened. It's about knowing where to get happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's what this is talking about with the joy. Joy isn't dependent on somebody doing something that you want. It's not dependent on a particular situation. You know, although in the moment, we might be very happy about something. But real happiness, real joy is when we know what teacher to choose, when we know how to go back and get it. And here's another analogy that I was thinking is, you know, with all of the electronics in our lives, cell phones, you know, iPads, headphones, everything, I just cannot believe how many chargers I have. But the truth is, every single one of those things runs out of charge. Mm-hmm. And then I can't use it. It doesn't make me very happy. But the truth is, I'm not overwhelmed with disappointment because I know how to plug it in and recharge it.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking, you know, it's not exactly the same thing, but we really do have a different sense of comfort and satisfaction and joy and defenselessness when we remember where we can go back to recharge.
Yes.
When we know, oops, you know, I just ran out of charge because I was disconnected. Mm-hmm. I mean, because literally that is what it is. When we choose, I mean, because always, you know, in A Course in Miracles, it just always comes back to which voice are we listening to? Which teacher are we choosing? Are we choosing the ego or are we choosing that voice of what sometimes we call the Holy Spirit, the inner guide? You call it the inner kindness teacher, whatever we want to call it. Every single time we disconnect from that, we're going to lose our charge. We're going to lose our focus. But knowing we can always come back, I mean, how simple is that? Talk about simple is just like, oh, yeah, I just forgot. I just need to come back here. That's all I need. I don't need all the answers. I don't need to know exactly what's going to happen today. I don't need to know exactly what the outcome is here. I just need to remember in this moment to choose the inner kindness teacher.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And you mentioned another word that I think is also a trigger for me is, you know, contingencies on outcomes. And that usually is a surefire clue that, you know, it's a euphoric at best situation, because if I have any kind of so-called peace or joyousness or you know, gratitude or anything like that that's based on something that can change, then, you know, it's sort of like the proverbial castle built on the sand and you know, the next big wave that comes in and out it goes kind of thing. So that's again, you know, so important, like you say, to have something that's consistent to rely on. And eventually we will, you know, give up the discharged approach to thinking altogether. And I think that's where, and it seems like that's why the course ends with, you know, choose once again. You know, it basically, mm-hmm. Essentially, we don't really master this curriculum until we consistently choose the peace that isn't contingent on anything, and then the joyousness that is a part of that. Should we read some of the, since they're really short, should we just read them aloud?
Yes, I think we should, but yeah. I do want to say one thing, and I have prefaced many of our discussions with this, so I'd like to say it again, especially for those people who may be listening, and maybe A Course in Miracles is new to you, mm-hmm. or maybe you're not too far into it, and you hear those phrases like advanced teacher of God. And you think, okay, that's not me. I don't want to do that. Or I don't know what they're talking about. I want to remind you that especially as we read through the manual, one of the first things the manual tells us is that every single person is a teacher. Because every single moment you're demonstrating in your life what your belief system is. And, you know, even if you want to take it on a purely emotional, sociological, or psychological level, we do that. You know what people think by their behavior. So when the manual talks about a teacher, they're saying every single one of us is a teacher because we are constantly teaching what we believe is true. But when they talk about an advanced teacher of God, then they truly are talking about somebody who is consciously teaching. attempting to go through this course or maybe something similar to, you know, to raise up their, I don't want to say raise their vibration. And Bruce, please feel free to come in here because I don't want to make it something that it's not. But the advanced teacher of God is somebody who is consciously attempting to follow A Course in Miracles or something similar so that they're conscious of what they're actually teaching. But we're all teachers. We are all teachers all the time. Okay. So that's why, you know, some people, I think, steer clear of the manual for teachers because they think it means, oh, I've got to teach A Course in Miracles. No, you don't. And in fact, A Course in Miracles doesn't necessarily ever tell you to teach A Course in Miracles or anything mm-hmm. else. Mm-hmm. So would you like to add to that?
First of all, I just want to say thank you again for prefacing our conversation with that, because that is such an important thing to remember, is that you know, it's all mind. We're all teachers. We're all students. There's no difference. And so those terms, again, it's like, as you point out, it could be very misleading to think that there's a special group that's being addressed here, and it has nothing to do with that whatsoever. It's really basically saying that the part of us that teaches or instructs or informs our thoughts, aka the inner teacher, of which there's only two. There's only Holy Spirit and ego, as A Course in Miracles would say. It's really basically saying, if you want to be at peace, you need to consistently choose the teacher within you. And that applies to everyone and everything. Even, you know, I mean, sounds kind of outrageous, but, you know, even inanimate, seemingly inanimate objects, you know, on some level are you know, choosing a teacher. Now we seem to be in a volitional package that has, we think, free will, but really what A Course in Miracles suggests is that the only free will we really have is which choice of teachers.
Right.
And that is not a little choice. That is a huge choice. And also to tie into that, there's an idea that I find particularly helpful. And I try to remind myself whenever I've come across it, and certainly situations, that seem to be better or worse than other situations are of any sort are a perfect cue or a clue for when I need to remember that. And that is that, you know, illusion A equals illusion B equals illusion C, meaning that if I can remember that every circumstance in truth is the same because truth doesn't change. That doesn't mean that the circumstances on the level of form in the world of space-time that I appear to find myself are not going to be changing and moment to moment, instant to instant, sometimes dramatically. But what can be consistent, what can be eternally true is the choice of what identity, what thought system, what capital S self or lower S self that I want to identify with. And that makes all the difference in the world. So, that's why these characteristics, these 10 characteristics that are talked about in this manual, apply to everyone. And it has nothing to do with whether or not you are formally or informally teaching or sharing or informing or conversing with anyone else. I mean, because really everyone else, as the course would suggest, is an aspect of our own mind. And so we're always just informing or teaching ourselves. And it's that choice of teacher that makes the difference.
Right.
So thank you for that.
Yeah. And I would elaborate on that a little bit. When Bruce said how momentous, how important that choice is, it's because if you go a little bit deeper, the ego's belief system is we're all in it for ourselves. We're all separated, and it's either me or you. Whereas you, if you want to say the God's voice or the Holy Spirit's voice, the opposite of that, the inner kindness teacher is saying, you know what? You're all one. There are no separate interests. And when you think about that division right there, every single choice when we're faced with anything, are we going to listen to the ego that says we're all separate, we're all in it for ourselves? You know, I can literally do something and it's not going to affect somebody else. Or rather, there's limited resources, so I better get what I can get. You know, I need to defend myself. I need to get what I can get. Or are you going to listen to the teacher whose belief system says you are all one? You are not separate. And anything that you do to somebody else is what you're doing to yourself. Because guess what? As Bruce said, they're all aspects of you. So that's where that division, if you think about it, is just huge. We're not just using words of ego versus God or ego versus the inner kindness teacher. We're talking about a belief system will take us two entirely different directions.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So shall we read the
Yes. Yeah. You want to start with joy?
Yeah, sure. This one is on page 13 in the printed version. This is section 5 in the manual under the general section of what are the characteristics of God's teachers. Again, that being everyone.
Yeah.
Nobody's left out of that category. So if you hear that the term, as CA points out, you're included. Okay. Joy is the inevitable result of gentleness, which was the preceding characteristic. And they all tie together and they're all interrelated and they're all a package deal. Gentleness means that fear is now impossible. And what could come to interfere with joy? The open hands of gentleness are always filled. The gentle have no pain. They cannot suffer. Why would they not be joyous? They are sure they are beloved and must be safe. Joy goes with gentleness as surely as grief attends attack. God's teachers trust in him, and they are sure his teacher, capital H, capital T there, goes before them, making sure no harm can come to them. They hold his gifts and follow in his way because God's voice directs them in all things. Joy is their song of thanks, and Christ looks down on them in thanks as well. His need of them is just as great as theirs of him. How joyous it is to share the purpose of salvation. And I have, again, a specific example is yesterday evening when after scrambling around the garage and sweeping some water out and turning off, circuit breaker and few little miscellaneous things like that, I realized, my wife could feel really bad about, being the person who just happened to be the one to pull on the sprayer in the kitchen that started the pipe burst.
Right. And what did you do?
So what I did is I gave her a big hug and said, it could have been me that did that. And not to feel bad. And I really meant it. And I think she got that. And then, a little while later, we spent the evening watching a nice movie.
Yeah.
And enjoying the evening. It's like, why not? I mean, but I think it was, again, a reminder to me that maybe in years past, I might have flown off the handle or at least been upset and whether either overt or covertly, done the whole blame, shame, guilt trip thing. And it's like, I know I've been there too many times and it does not work. And it wouldn't have helped the situation at all. It would have just aggravated it. So I think that's, again, the gentleness of recognizing, this person I share my life with and every person on the planet is in the same boat. We're all, uncertain, lonely, and in constant fear, as the Course says. We're all trying to sort out what Ken Wapnick says is trying to make the best of a perfectly miserable situation.
Yeah.
And as he points out in that wonderful commentary on Workbook Lesson 182, it's not to make you feel worse. It's just to recognize how under ego's guidance, we're already about as miserable as we could possibly be and very unhappy. So the joy that is the antithesis of ego's misery comes as a result of just saying, I can forgive myself for this projection. I can choose peace instead of this. I can look at, whether it's a pipe bursting or, something I watched on TV that seems upsetting, whether it's, a foreign military, threat or a political situation or an environmental situation or an economic situation or a biological health situation. It doesn't matter how close or far from home it seems to be. It's all part of a dream curriculum, as A Course in Miracles would suggest, that does not have to impact our joy, our peace, and our you know, unchanging well-being if we choose to not let it be assaulted by dream reflections.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I was thinking, you know, and I hope I'm not getting too confused. Like I said, I'm so into this other book, The Journey Home, that I'm just enjoying it so much. But once again, because everything in A Course in Miracles really is very holistic. And what I mean by that is you pick out anything, it's always going to go back, in a sense, to the core, to what does this all really mean? And something I was reading in The Journey Home, now he didn't say this, and maybe it's just this type of year, but it was so the story of Scrooge, because he said, you guys, look at your purpose. And see, once again, as an astrologer, I'm thinking of Saturn and Capricorn and going, that's what we're asking ourselves. What is our purpose? What's, you know, what are we doing here? What is our plan? And he said, do you realize that your purpose for the body is really to spend your time building a list of grievances? And that's where the Scrooge comes in. You know, when his old partner comes and says, you're building this huge chain, you've got this chain. Well, I mean, Ken is talking about, you know, as he's talking about the obstacles to peace in the journey home, he's talking about, you know, that is your purpose, guys. You are building a grievance list. Because as a body, or when you listen to the ego says you can deflect, you can make yourself the innocent victim, but you got to have your list. So the more people you can put on the list and say, look over there, you know, and when I think about it, how often do we do that? I mean, how often do you say something to somebody and they go, oh, but you blah, 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 or what about that person? And, you know, I just started laughing when I saw it once again, because it might as well have been Scrooge in his chain, because we're building this huge list of grievances so that at any point we can prove we're the innocent victim. And so whether or not we're doing that with other people or we're doing it with God, it's like we want to have the best and the longest list so that we can literally go, don't look at me. Look over there. Look how bad. Look how horrible this is. Surely I'm the innocent victim. However, just as in the story of Scrooge, it's miserable. You know, occupation, that direction, that purpose to constantly be compiling the grievance list is a miserable occupation. It brings no joy and it brings no satisfaction. And besides, it doesn't work. You know,
exactly.
When it really comes down to it, it just plain doesn't work. So it kind of goes back to this joy here. What is going to be your purpose? And if your purpose is to attack, if your purpose is to convince yourself or other people or God that you are the innocent victim, because surely these other people have done something so much worse than you could have ever done, then joy just keeps escaping us. You know, we don't find peace. We don't find joy. We find happiness in small little events, and it just slips through our fingers.
Exactly. As you're saying that, I was thinking of, you know, a quote from Shakespeare, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune, you know, and how, you know, Scrooge with his ledger, you know, it appeared to be accounting of finances, but the ledger that we all keep is really the ledger of grievances. And that's the least little irritations or annoyances or things that appear to be bigger, like, oh, I don't know, pipes bursting or bombs bursting in air. I don't know. Rockets, you know, whatever. I mean, depending on your perspective, everything can be an attack on our individuality. And that's at the heart of what ego is really terrified about. And it's really a trembling child that is horrified at the idea that there could be, you know, a situation in which our identity as a separate self is called into question. Because if we can see that is a fraud, we need to recognize that there's a real self that is a bigger self, is all inclusive. And I think that's part of where the foundation comes from, choosing, as you were talking about earlier, the shared interest is really our gateway to that awareness. Is when we remember that everybody's in the same boat, and we can afford to be kind and do what we can, not just on the level of behavior, which is, you know, helpful, but primarily on the mind, level of the mind. Because if we can include everyone in our assessment of self, our identification, our identity, then that gives us a whole different perspective. And it essentially loosens the grip that we have on the ego identity, which really has never served us. And that, and then we can say, you know, I don't really need that ledger of grievances and that's, you know, long list of assaults and slights against my person to be continually dragging out from the past and haunting the present, you know, like a Scrooge ghost. You know, why would I want all those things to continually to, you know, aggravate me if I have a real alternative that's peaceful? And so anyway, I think.
Well, and that's it. You know, whether we realize it or not, and I think when we stop and think about it, we do realize it's a pretty heavy burden to be carrying all that stuff around.
Oh, absolutely.
And yet we see it every single day. I mean, how often, you know, somebody says, oh, I fell on the ice and did this. And I go, oh, but I fell on the ice and blah, blah, blah. You know, I am the innocent victim here. And I even have a better victimization story than you. And when you think about it, it's like, wow, why would you want to portray yourself as a victim? And why do you want to continue carrying around the grievances? You know, I mean, like I said, A Course in Miracles, I often say this, it literally makes me laugh out loud. And the reason is because when you see it in black and white, or when I see it in black and white, I literally go, oh my God, what? How foolish have I been? And it seems hysterically funny.
It really is.
That, you know, when they talk about this being an insane world or the ego being an insane system, you look, when you see it in black and white, you go, oh my God, that is total insanity that I would spend my time defending this, that I would spend my time making sure that this continues instead of just going, whoa, you know. It's just amazing. I mean, it really is
insane. And it is hilarious. And as you were saying that, I was reminded of one of my favorite Monty Python skits, which if you haven't seen is just hilarious. It's called The Four Yorkshiremen. And I just put a link to it in the chat window in case you want to post that on the social media. And it's basically four guys in the Monty Python troupe that are essentially doing a one downsmanship. They're supposedly living a life of ease and luxury, but they're now reminiscing about how bad their past was, and it's just hilarious. I mean, it starts out with, oh well, you were lucky, you know, I only had such and such, and then it just, you know, it just escalates from there, and at the end, you know, it's just not only, you know, just so horrifically awful, but completely unbelievable. The exaggerations that they get to in order to maintain the best victim status, you know, but that's kind of, you know, how the insanity of the ego, you know, it's like, you know, the I'm flashing on there was an old TV show that maybe you remember, The Queen for a Day. And that was basically,
oh my God.
it was almost like a, you know, who's got the most pitiful story kind of thing. And but this was sort of that kind of thing, you know. I never watched much of it, but I remember it was sort of like a, you know, a reality TV soap opera kind of a thing. And but it's that's the kind of, you know, martyr drama storytelling that the ego relishes. And I think that's why Ken Wapnick says, you know, to really be lucid about our mind and recognize that when we have the least little bit of self-pity, victimhood, martyrdom, and it doesn't matter what side we're on, if we recognize that we're being mean-spirited or, you know, not as kind-hearted as we could be in any given situation, we're in the same boat, you know, we're in the same ego boat, and that's a sinking vessel. In fact, it never sailed in truth, but in our dream, it, you know, appears to not be holding water well. So,
right.
With the, anyway, but if you haven't seen The Four Yorkshiremen, it's pretty hilarious. And it really is a funny skit. But yeah. it's just an example of how crazy it is to savor the the lack of peace and the lack of joyousness, and to try to use that as a weapon against not only each other, but a weapon against God, which kind of ties into, you know, your commentary about the Journey Home, which is a brilliant book. I'm actually just a third of the way through the book, if that, and I'm doing the same kind of thing, reading it just a few pages at a time, because it really is just chock full of just great insights.
Well, it blows my mind is what it does.
Yeah.
I mean, it totally stops. I mean, there's ideas that literally, oh my God. I mean, it just blows my mind, even though, once again, I've read it before.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, it also points out just how willing we are to forget, how willing we are to just bury ourselves in what we consider reality, you know, and in our everyday existence. And in fact, I think it came from there too, where Ken says, you know, the purpose of the miracle isn't necessarily to wake you up from the dream. The purpose of the miracle is for you to recognize within the dream that you've got a choice,
mm-hmm.
that you can choose a different teacher. You can choose a different dream. And that's, you know, kind of once again at the crux of the ego's belief system is, oh, no, you can't. You are a victim. There is no choice. I mean, the ego doesn't want us to ever understand, remember that there's a choice, that mm-hmm. there is another reality, so to speak, that there is another possibility. And it also goes back to, it doesn't matter what happens to us. What matters is our perception and interpretation of what happens to us.
Exactly.
And that's where the choice comes in. See, ego, or in a sense, human bodies, you know, the human condition would have us say, okay, this happens, this equals bad. You know, this is good, this is bad. You know, it goes right back to that judgment thing. Instead of going, you know what, it's always a perception, it's always an interpretation. It's not the event, it's the interpretation.
Exactly.
And I think both of these, joy and defenselessness, really pull into those things. You know, because the joy is if you can change your perception about what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
You
exactly.
Know?
There's a book and a movie, both about, essentially in concentration camps in Nazi Germany that come to mind. One is Life is Beautiful. A movie that demonstrated how, you know, this guy who was, you know, he and his son were both in this concentration camp, and he was able to share in a kind-hearted way, essentially a myth to his son that it was just a game, which in truth it really is. But he was able to make you know, the experience completely different for his son, who then escaped. And then I was also thinking of Viktor Frankl, you know, Man's Search for Meaning. And his perspective was that, you could be stripped of all kinds of things, but you can't be stripped of your decision-making faculty. And that's, I think, the point of what his writing was about, is my understanding anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, no matter how horrific the circumstance, there is always a choice of teacher. And that choice is really, it's symbolically sort of a vertical axis, where the ego's whole, you know, dimensional perspective is horizontal only. It doesn't know how to look up, to paraphrase Douglas Adams in one of his books. it's the option that we can see peace instead of all the illusions, none of which make us happy. And the ego only sees the illusions of fear and its derivatives and its variations, whereas the Holy Spirit does propose an illusion, but it's the one illusion that leads away from fear, which is forgiveness, and which is a reflection of the reality of our true being, that our true eternal being, that really can choose peace consistently. And that's what we're asked to do. So.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, before I'm going to read the defenselessness, but before I do, I also want to say something, once again, going back to the Journey Home, that, you know, it's just so important, or that, you know, I get a visual of this when Ken talks about it and reading what, you know, it says in the text. And that is that joy is already within us.
Mm-hmm.
Peace peace is already within us. And it, but it almost feels like to me a castle, and we have built a moat around the castle, and we are determined to not sort of identify with that peace. We're determined to not let that be what we recognize as our center. And, you know, so once again, we build the defenses and build the defenses and build the defenses against something that, in a sense, we can never eradicate the peace that's within us. We can never eradicate who we truly are, even though we can live on the outside of that moat, or we can keep pretending that all these defenses can change that, and they never can. And, right. You know, as I keep reading, you know, talk about joy or talk about comfort, I just keep getting that sense of what it feels like to let, it's almost like the ocean of peace or the ocean of comfort, the ocean of joy just keeps pushing against those sandcastles, just keeps pushing against that sand. And ultimately, we can wear ourselves out. We can fatigue ourselves by, you know, building those sandcastles, building those defenses. Mm-hmm. But the peace will, the minute we let go, the minute we don't have that investment, that peace will simply wash through.
Exactly.
You know, and in fact, if for any of you who have seen the movie, I think it's The Two Towers that's part of The Lord of the Rings. Mm-hmm. Do you remember? I mean, if you saw that's the second of the three movies, or the second of the, you know, three stories. And that's where there's a tower, you know, Tower of Evil, let's put it that way. And the trees, or what they call the Ents, the guardians of the trees, come along and they undam the rivers, or I can't remember exactly how they did it. But literally the whole place is just awash. And so it wasn't about guns. It wasn't about stones. It wasn't about any kind of evil. They just simply flooded it, you know, and destroyed everything in its path, because they destroyed the foundation. You know, the water just came and flowed over and flooded and just took all the oomph out of everything. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing. It's like the ocean of peace. What's already there, if we could just quit fighting that. You know, just even in a moment, if we could choose, you know what, this is really tiring, because that's it. Most of our activity is incredibly fatiguing.
And
you know, just let the ocean flow through it. And I think that's also a way of saying to people that this is never going to make sense to your mind. This is never going to make sense to your brain that wants things to be logical. We cannot, when we're in separate bodies, really, truly understand oneness. Mm-hmm. That's almost a concept that is beyond us. And so in your everyday life, as you're just saying, I could choose peace instead of this. I could choose a different teacher. I could choose the inner kindness teacher. I could choose that voice. I don't think, once again, that we have to make it complicated and say, okay, what do I need to do? You know, where do I need to park? Where do I need to shop? What do I need to do? We simply need to know that our mind is open to it. And then, in a sense, just feel, I will be guided. And maybe not guided to the parking space, because I don't think, there again, I don't think God cares where you park. But just guided to make the choices and decisions that are going to lead you to more peace. And just sitting in that contentment, because I find myself doing that. Okay, what is the godly thing to do? What is the kind thing to do? What is the gentle thing to do? And it's like, once again, that's a mistake. My brain is never going to figure that out. All I need to do is turn to the inner kindness teacher and trust the process.
You got it.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And it's knowing that there's nothing to defend in truth with that real identity that we share, and that we, again, that's why the shared interest is so important, as you point out. Because, you know, when we think in terms of what is, you know, truly helpful to everyone, and we don't have to know what that is. We just have the willingness to be guided to, you know, have our thoughts reflect that. That in itself really is what washes away the ego defenses, because they're no longer needed at that point, are they?
Right. And, you know, just trusting the process, that it's not having the right answer, it's having the right attitude. That's what, and in fact, isn't that what people feel from us anyway? You know, we can give somebody the most wonderful gift with the wrong attitude, and they don't love the gift. You know, they're not overly impressed. In fact, if anything, maybe they're annoyed. And we somehow think that the form is always going to trump what the attitude or the belief is, and it's not going to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to quickly read the defenseless section just so we'll get it into this, and then we'll have some closing comments and go. But so under defenselessness, it says God's teachers have learned how to be simple. They have no dreams that need defense against the truth. They do not try to make themselves. Their joy comes from their understanding who created them. And does what God created need defense? No one can become an advanced teacher of God until he fully understands that defenses are but foolish guardians of mad illusions. The more grotesque the dream, the fiercer and more powerful its defenses seem to be. Yet when the teacher of God finally agrees to look past them, he finds that nothing was there. Slowly at first, he lets himself be undeceived, but he learns faster as his trust increases. It is not danger that comes when defenses are laid down. It is safety. It is peace. It is joy. And it is God.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that really is the key, because once we look at the ego defenses, and again, this is never talking about the level of form. It doesn't mean, you know, don't lock your car if you feel like you need to lock it, or take out health insurance, or you know all the different things that, you know, were just sort of common sense things that people do in the world on the level of form. You know, brushing your teeth would be in the same
thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all those things, you know, and having, you know, financial reserves and good food community activism, you know, anything that is motivated out of fear ultimately is going to backfire. But we can still do the same things with a different motivation. It doesn't have to be in a defensive mindset or a defensive thought system. And that's where the peace comes from, is if we do things as an expression of the thought system of peace, the form can look almost identical, but the thought system behind it can be very different. And like you were saying earlier, I think the way we tell is, how do you feel around people? And do you feel at ease, or do you feel like you're, you know, being condemned? And again, that's our own projection ultimately, but that's a clue, isn't it? That,
mm-hmm.
that we know when we're at peace, and we're choosing peace, there's no need to defend anything. And as a result of that, the people that are around us won't feel that they need to defend themselves as well. That's always a clue. So as Ken Wapnick says, you know, rather than getting some kind of, you know, fancy survey or whatever and sophisticated feedback system, just ask the people you live with, you know. And they'll tell you, you know, if you're working out of ego or not. and that's you know, a way to remind ourselves that everything and everyone, you know, whether it's someone that we are familiar with and see all the time, or someone we just relate to on an occasional basis, becomes a symbol for one of those two thought systems. They become a symbol for either our choice for kindness or our choice for defensiveness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and one of the sentences I love in this particular section is when it says, slowly at first, he lets himself be undeceived, but he learns faster as his trust increases. So once again, I think I'm appealing to all of those of you out there who are like me, and I somehow have this checklist of everything that I think I have to learn or everything I have to do. And I just forget that it can be much simpler than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all I do is, at first, if I can just allow myself to start seeing that first inkling, you know, in that dam, you know, just pull out that first little rock, that first obstacle, and then allow it slowly to build and build and build, you know, and quit looking to the past and the chain, or, you know, that Scrooge has built, or the list of grievances. You know, just today, I can, in a sense, make that all go away. I can just decide today, I'm going to scrap that list of grievances. You know, that's just not going to be my purpose. That's not going to be the direction that I'm going.
Exactly.
Any ending comments, Bruce?
I was just going to read. This is from workbook lesson number. So I'm going to scroll back up there. I've got it on my computer. 135. And this is if I defend myself, I'm attacked. So I just searched for that word defenselessness, and I found this is paragraph 21 and then through the part of 22. It says, we will anticipate that time today with present confidence, for this is part of what was planned for us. We will be sure that everything we need is given us for our accomplishment of this today. We make no plans for how it will be done, but realize that our defenselessness is all that is required for the truth to dawn upon our minds with certainty.
Mm.
And then skipping ahead says, if I defend myself, I'm attacked, but in defenselessness, I will be strong, and I will learn what my defenses hide. And what's when we reveal, you know, when we pull back the facade and see what the defenses hide, it's like, well, why would I want to defend that? Why would I want to defend being miserable? And that's really what this curriculum is suggesting, is that's really all our defenses hide, is a crazy idea that we deserve to be miserable because of some imagined incident or involvement or infraction that split apart the oneness that we all, on some level or another, remember that we truly are. We think that we've, you know, blown up God,
right,
into smithereens, as they say. But that perfect oneness has never been shattered. And if we can look at our defenses, we can get back to that. As you say, you know, we don't, oneness is a concept we don't really understand, but shared interest is something we do can understand. So seeing that, you know, I'm in the same boat as you and everyone else in my life, that is really, you know, just a huge important part of the course that gives us the opportunity to look at our thoughts and to see where they can serve us and everyone rather than at the expense of anyone else. And that's can be truly helpful, right?
Yes, it can. All right. Well, Bruce, thank you so much for being here today. And I'm going to post his website, www.acimblog.com, into the chat room over on Facebook. So if you want to check out some other things by Bruce, I also already posted the Foundation for A Course in Miracles in the chat room, which is www.facim.org. And the reason is because they have a wealth of information available both in libraries that, you know, free information like some of what Bruce was reading from. You can simply go there and search on terms and find all kinds of things to read. But you can also buy books like the one that we were talking about, The Journey Home. But I also wanted to announce them because they're located in Temecula, California. And as far as I know, they are doing their last class in Temecula, their last workshop, which is so sad to me. But for those of you who don't live in Temecula and you can't go there, you can join me and other people who've registered to get the class by streaming. That class, I believe, is on Wednesday the 24th. Yep. I think you can still register through this Sunday if you go. It was like $40, I think. I mean, it was just an unbelievable price for a day course. Mm-hmm. And you can stream it. And here's what's really cool. Let's say you go, okay, I can't sit at my computer. I can't sit at my device all day Wednesday and listen to this class. Well, if you register, you have access to the recordings of it, which are basically like podcasts. You can access those for, I think, about 2 weeks. So
week and a half, I think. Yeah, typically.
Week and a half. So, you know, if that's something you want to do, I would just encourage you to at least experience that one time.
Yes.
So on that note, I realize we need to close. Any other quick announcements, Bruce?
Thank you for mentioning that. Yeah, I was going to suggest the same thing, and I'm looking forward to that last streaming class as well. Nothing specific other than wishing everyone happy mindfulness and a gentle forgiveness classroom as we continue to look at our mind and return home to where we never left. So
okay.
Thanks, CA.
All right. Well, thank you, Bruce, and everybody. Thank you for being here today. And thanks to Scott Weaver, our producer. So until next week, when we will join you every week for A Course in Miracles in this time slot, relax and wear loose clothes. You have been listening to The Friday Morning Show with CA Brooks and my guest, Bruce Rawls, on 1-2 Radio, where we are changing the way you think about life and spirituality.